Welcome to another episode of The Suspendables with funny man Jungle Jim Jerome and retired NHL star Russ Cortinel. Each week they unleash their raw, stripped down, unfiltered opinions on all things hockey and maybe other stuff too. Who knows? Inside stories, absolutely. Outrage, guaranteed. Offside, for sure. And always plenty of laughs. Strap in. The Suspendables is coming at you right now.
All right, there's the big intro. Love it. Show's getting bigger and better all the time. Coming up on today's show, here's the big stuff. Russ had dinner with a guy who works for the Inquirer. What's his job? He ruins people's lives. Great conversation about that. Players with other talents besides hockey. You know, there's some story. Chris Chelios could have been a bobsledder. Bunch of double athletes, you're right, who played football and baseball and stuff. We talk about another guy who has an exceptional talent. And on a dare, I went and sat in a booth with Mariah Carey. Not a good idea. That and much more coming up.
Beautiful. Now we have an intro.
We got an intro. This thing is becoming big league, folks. Okay.
And that voice. Come and strap in. The Suspendables is coming at you right now.
Anyway, the show, you're going to hear some new things with the show, that included. And we're adding some music and stuff. They got a guy in charge of our show now, Russ. Okay.
Yeah.
They've hired a guy. Great guy, Reg.
Big Reg.
Big Reg, who lives down in L.A., and he works there, but he's a Canadian from Winnipeg. And so I've been talking to him through the week about a bunch of stuff, and so it's great. So we're trying to work on the show all the time. And
we finally have a pro on the show.
Yeah, so everything's in place until the guy said, there's one other issue, the talent.
Hey, Reg, welcome to the minors.
Yeah, welcome to the minors, baby. Yeah, isn't that funny? Yeah, isn't that the truth? So anyway, we're excited about it. The show is going strong, and we're getting more listeners all the time. And we've got, you know, we're probably up towards a couple hundred thousand people who've listened to the show.
Who knew?
A cumulative thing. So anyway, Rusty, another week in the books. Lots going on, as usual. Although I didn't do my usual show prep.
Yeah, thank fucking God.
And I'll tell you about that later. But
oh my God, you and your obnoxious texts.
Would you stop it? I'm just trying to be inclusive. Okay,
inclusive, annoying and inclusive.
You know what, Russ? Right away, you're going to be in trouble for this because I always get tweets from people. They feel sorry for me when you
get
on my case.
Let's go do a GoFundMe so we can get you into an apartment with heat.
Or get me away from you. GoFundMe. Yeah. I thought of you the other day. I found something very funny and I steal it when I think there's something funny. You know, you hear a great joke.
R&D, rob and duplicate.
Rob and duplicate. And the guy said, you know, I've got great news. To the person who dropped at the Safeway here in Riverbend, who dropped $350 rolled up in an elastic, you need to reach out to me because I want to return your elastic.
Yeah, and you're losing lottery tickets. Just so I can show you where the money went.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You're in LA, right?
I'm in LA, yeah.
I think every show we've done, I've done shows from different places a couple of times, but we've always seemed to catch you in LA, although you travel all over the joint.
Well, I was in Idaho last summer, so.
Yeah, we know Russ. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I was worried about you there because thought you might be the first signs of dementia. Can't remember anything.
I'm coming down as the listeners of the Suspendables, Russ, have affectionately called your summer place now Geezer Ranch.
Geezer.
Okay. But you're in LA.
Yeah.
And we usually record on Sunday nights. This is a Monday night that we're doing it. And you had a pretty cool dinner guest last night. What happened there? Let's hear about that.
So fellow Canadian Chris Radomski. Chris grew up in Toronto and got in the financial business and loves his hockey and became fast friends when we first met. He and another, his partner, created 100 Acre Wine.
That's a big one, right, Russ?
Oh, it's outstanding. It's unbelievable. These two Canadians have, they got like 10, 100-point wines over the years. But anyways, I met them through their winery, and we've become great friends. He came over. He lives in Florida now. And I said, well, let's have a late lunch, early dinner. And then he had to go to Newport, which is probably about an hour and a half away.
Late lunch. I think a late lunch. Yeah. Nothing too early.
Yeah. Late lunch, early dinner. And so we drank some of his wine, 100 acre wine. And he now has Duke Bourbon with John Wayne's son.
Wow.
So his new venture, he got bought out 100 acre by Jason Woodbridge, and Jason owns it himself. And now Chris is, he's got Duke Bourbon, he's got a tequila, and other things. So he's in the spirit business.
Is he ever?
And we got spirited.
Yeah.
So
last night. You got after it a bit.
Oh boy, did we ever. I was in bed early. He invited, can I bring over this guy I'm doing some business with? And I go, okay. So I don't want to say the guy's name, but really good guy, funny, and he gets all the scoops for the Rags, you know, and Inquirer and all those magazines.
Like,
and
he works for them?
Yeah. And so he is in charge of getting the scoops, so buying, you know, videos and stories and
like all the shitty stuff, like all the skank and all that.
Oh my god. Well, he said I basically ruin people's lives for a living.
Oh no.
So he was telling stories like of Bruce Jenner when they caught him dressing up like a woman. Now with Caitlyn, he talked about Mike Comrie getting engaged.
Sure.
If you want to look it up online, you'll see what I'm talking about. And then other stories of famous people, the Trump audio tape,
right?
And he's so. Anyways, he started telling all these somewhat funny stories, but a little scary. So I told him a couple stories that happened like 25, 20 years ago. Anyways, we had a good chuckle.
Did you ask him for his phone before you started for dinner? I'd be afraid of this guy.
No, but I did get his number. So anyways, we were hearing some pretty funny stuff, and just, you know, the secrecy and the back alley deals. You know, here's $500,000 in cash. Give me the story. Give me the videotape and that kind of shit.
Are those numbers real numbers? Like, is it always in the hundreds of thousands to buy some of these stories?
The most I think last night the most I heard him say was $600,000, and I, you know, after that many wines, I couldn't remember exactly which story, but it wasn't in the millions. It was in the, you know, I heard $600,000 that he paid for something. So I think those stories are probably a couple thousand. I don't know how I didn't really, I should have asked. Next dinner, I'll ask him.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. And let's back up a sec. What would the 100 acre guy make if you had to take a stab? Because the wine business is huge. I gave up drinking at the wrong time, right when wine was sexy, and there's a million wine companies, and now tequila is the sexy thing to do, and rye and all these stuff, and everyone's getting into it. I don't know if I would want to get into it now. It seems so highly competitive. But what would 100 acre wine sell for? He sold to...
Wow, to, probably in the hundreds of millions.
No shit.
But I would guess, but I have to say it's got to be a couple hundred million. I mean, Casamigos tequila, they sold it after 4.5 years for $1 billion, and they got $700 million in cash. I know that much. And then they have an earnout at $300 million. So I don't know. They only can make so many, you know, they only make so much of their wine, but anyway, it's got to be in the hundreds of millions.
How did you not get into that business? You know everybody.
I don't know.
It's probably not a sideline, eh?
Well, it's really expensive. In Napa now, it's you don't really make money. It's more of a showpiece. There's other places you can make money at making wine, but Napa now the land prices are so expensive, and that somebody told me if you want to buy a winery in Napa, you'll turn a profit in 101 years.
right.
But I thought about maybe planting a little vineyard in our house that we had down the way. We had a little acreage, and I don't know. Just I'd rather go to the store and buy the wine. I would screw it up.
My old man always said to me, everyone at some point, okay, no matter who you are, you included, me included, everybody always sits down at some point and goes, maybe I should get into the bar business, right? Anyone who drinks, anyone who spends any time, and I drank a lot. And I thought, gee, maybe I should do that. You know, I'll call it Jerome's, and people come from far and wide and all this shit. And my old man always said to me, you know, I would rather be on this side of the bar.
Yeah.
It's a lot more fun and no bar. Risk, you know? Yeah, belly up to the bar.
Yeah. Just $100 or $200.
Yeah, exactly.
$100 or $2 maybe.
Well, my old man he'd go into the bartender and say like this, okay, I'll just have one more after that, two others, and then one more, and then I gotta fuck off. So, Russ, I had heard, I think maybe when we were talking before the show, this is interesting, the rag industry, okay, the gossip mm-hmm. industry.
Yeah.
In its worst, it's Star Magazine, The Inquirer. Those are the ones you do not want to get in. You do not want to. Mm-mm. First of all, they make the shit up. I don't know how they get away with it. People would be a softer one, you know, they don't, and us, or I don't know what the other ones are. But people's appetite for it, Russ, if you don't think it's big, what was the number the guy told you? How many people?
80 million hits a day.
Online. To read Inquirer stories.
And read those gossip stories, yeah, that they own.
Unbelievable. So
80 million a day. He goes, yeah, tomorrow another 80 million are going to hit our sites and read whatever crap that we put up there. So the interest of people knowing more about other people, like look at the actors. I mean, everybody wants to know every little... Anyone who's famous, you know, people look up and want to see, you know, what do they have for dinner? Right. Where do they go? Look at what's happening in Canada right now with, what are they calling it? Mexit? With Meghan and
Harry. Moving to town.
They're calling it Mexit in my old hometown, Victoria. I mean, they're just going crazy because they're staying there right now.
Right, right. That's sort of friendly fire, though, right? Like there's people love to know the stuff about the royal family. They try and cause shit. These guys.
Well, that's why it's not friendly fire because that's why they left. There was all kinds of bad stories out there about them treating her poorly, and they couldn't take it anymore. And doesn't want the same thing to happen to her. What happened to his mom with the media and da da da. But I mean, it's not friendly fire. That's why they left.
No, but generally. No, but the royals, the stuff for them, it's just like, okay, we can't go 1 second without a bunch of cameras. Okay, it's not that they're causing dirt. Yeah. It's just insane. They're just smothered with it. There is some unfriendly fire there with the son of the queen, who might be a little hot water there with
might be
yeah, not looking good for him.
Have you seen the odds in Vegas? No, not looking good.
Not looking good for who is it? Which prince is it? Not Andrew?
Prince Andrew, yeah.
Yeah. I think Andrew's in some hot water there with a couple of girls or so. Anyway, Russ, you're a celebrity. You live that life. You grew up as a player, and certainly this form of gossip and how, you know, 80 million people, you know, all they're looking at is shit, right? It's just a bad story about someone or half made up or a misleading headline.
Yeah, it's not great.
And yet you talk about. Everyone wants to know what George Clooney had for dinner, you know, or where he holidayed. What are people allowed to know about you as a celebrity?
I think, like Sir Savard said it best when I played Montreal, because the players in Montreal are under the microscope like no other city. And he said, like a politician, you're open game, and you got to watch what you're doing, and you know you can't. You go right when you're supposed to go left. They're gonna write about it. They're gonna talk about it. So I think you have to be protective of yourself and worry about the situations you're in. I heard somebody who played in Montreal. They never went to the bars. They stayed in restaurants, and they said you get the mafia seat. You get in the corner so you can face the restaurant. Not because you wanted everybody to see you, but you wanted to see if somebody was videotaping you, you know, in the restaurant.
Right. Right.
And with the cameras and the phones now, it's just, you know, people can take pictures and videotape of almost anybody. So look at what we're learning about Kobe. After he passes through this horrible accident, we're hearing all these beautiful stories about what he did and nobody, you know, those really touching stories of donating money and doing this and coaching and all that stuff that I didn't know about it. Now the world knows about this side of him mm-hmm. that, you know, isn't the professional athlete. It's the father and the guy who's done really well that's given money back. But gosh, we didn't hear about right. any of that good stuff until the guy died.
It might be closer to home for you than you think with... Because the way they can spin shit is what would drive me bananas. And apparently you got no repercussion, you know, to try and sue them for this shit. They know every angle. They've been sued a million times. Like, you got a daughter now who dates a superstar in Eric mm-hmm. Hendrickson with the Minnesota yeah. Vikings. And they could be walking along, okay? Russ, they could be walking along. I see they're on a vacation after he finished playing. They went south somewhere. I assume mm-hmm. on Instagram or something like that.
Yeah.
And your daughter's gorgeous, right? She's a model. Mm-hmm. She looks beautiful. This guy looks like a Greek god, you know, like the yeah. power couple here, right?
Yeah.
These two. And they might be looking, and maybe a guy snaps a picture and it catches you with your eyes half closed or something. You know yeah. what I mean? When you take the yeah. picture at the wrong time. And these guys can turn this into a headline of Courtney girl smokes pot. Look at her. I mean, wait till that happens to you, Russ, right? You'll be going, fuck, I'm going to kill someone.
Yeah. Well, I always joke that so many people want to be famous until they're famous.
Isn't that the truth?
And then they realize what comes with it. But I see it living down here. And I've said this on the show before where I've seen guys make a lot of money without any fame. And the next thing they want to do, okay, now I've made all this money. I want people to know who I am. And they don't say it, but you can see what they're doing.
Sure.
Oh, I'm going to make a movie, you know, here's X amount of dollars. And all they want the fame. And then,
right.
geez, sometimes when you get the fame, you didn't realize what it came with. And we just see the good stuff, you know,
right.
the red carpet and all this and the money and
right.
oh my God, everybody knows who they are. And then they don't see all the crap that goes with it,
right.
you know, trying to drop your kids off at school and live a normal life. And you can't.
I know the owner here, Daryl Cates. The owner of the Oilers, and Daryl is a multi-billionaire. You've probably met Daryl over the time. And of course, Wayne works with the Oilers now, or for them, or he owns them. I don't know. It's one of those. Anyway, Daryl Cates, you never see him in the press. It's all they can do to get him to hold a press conference. They move him around the country. He has places all over the place, and everyone would think, you know, on the surface, yeah, I guess so. You know, the guy's so rich. But he's very nervous. He's very nervous about his children. His son here, for example, great young kid. He played in the hockey league with my son years ago. And I see him from time to time. He's a good friend of Ty Gretzky. They're about the same age. Beautiful. Let's all pause. White Claw. And this kid is 24 hours a day, has a security guard with him.
Yeah.
You know, and the obvious is, someone's going to snap my kids up. Someone's going to kidnap
yeah.
my kids, you know. So, you know, everyone says, you know, I've been rich and I've been poor. The funny one is, you know, believe me, I'd rather be rich.
Yeah.
But, oh my God, you know, you're a parent. I'm a parent. When you heard that, you're like, I can't imagine that. We got enough worry with our kids ourselves.
Yeah. I toured Daryl and his family at McKenna in Maui. They have a home on the Big Island, and
couldn't sell them.
They came over and toured, and I took them on the tour, and there was four. I think it was four security guards with
yeah.
them.
Yeah, his home here.
They're huge.
They're big, man. This guy's big time. And
I only had a four-seater golf cart. We had to take two.
All the security, the detail.
Oh my God,
that's funny. Yeah. You know, his home here. There's five black Suburbans parked out in front. Lights running.
Lights running.
Yeah.
Lights on.
On. The lights are on. Yeah, the car's okay. running. I mean, lights.
I haven't seen running lights. But...
Oh, calm down there, Skipper. Okay, just. So anyway, that's his life. But I know Terry Jones here, prolific sports writer. You would know Terry from your days playing hockey. And he wrote an article. Terry's always trying to find a different angle, not always popular. And he wrote an article one day against Daryl Katz about being an absentee owner. Okay, every team's fighting for their life all the time to sell tickets and all that. And he went on this article that maybe it's a problem with the ownership never being around. Be nice to see him, shit like that. And he goes, I hear now he spends all his time in a high-rise condo in downtown Vancouver. And I was having dinner at a charity event, and Daryl was there. He was at my table, actually. And his security guy was there beside me, and he was talking about how they could have just absolutely grabbed Terry Jones and said, what are you doing, man? We move him around. Like, and we don't want people to know where he is, you know? And
wow.
And they were really upset with Terry exposing him that way. And Terry got tuned up, you know, quickly about this guy. So anyway, are they first world problems? I don't know. I don't know if I want that.
Yeah, that seems, I know a lot of wealthy people, and here's my thing. And I guess it was public how much he sold his company for, you know, some privates better than public guys will tell you, but I don't know. I could see having maybe some security for the kids a little bit, but I tend to think you bring that on yourself by you're attracting when you see security guards, you're like, oh, who's here? Is it the president? Is it this? And I've seen celebrities with, and I've like acting, you know, actors that have it and some that don't. And I'll never forget the story of Bruce Springsteen driving around in his motorcycle, and four of our LA Kings were in a little bar, and he was there sitting by himself having a beer, and they invited him over. They're like, that's Bruce Springsteen. Mm-hmm. And they're like, no, it can't be. And one of the guys went over and said, hey, we've played with the LA Kings. We'd love to buy you a beer. And he goes, where are you sitting? And he went over and sat with him.
Oh, cool.
Then, you know, you see other guys that have like the entourage and, you know, shit's happening, you know, because I don't know why Daryl needs all that security, but maybe something's happened that nobody knows about. You know, maybe there are some people out there that have tried to do things, and if they have, then of course he deserves every bit of that security, but I hope it's warranted, not wanted. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I understand exactly what you're saying. I was in Toronto during the Toronto Film Festival one year. I don't know how I ended up there. I was doing a gig somewhere. These are my blurry days, Russ.
Yeah.
And we were hammered. We went to a restaurant, me and my buddies. And
these were my blurry days. I was hammered. I don't think you have to tell us.
In walks Mariah Carey into the restaurant.
Ooh.
And she sits down at a booth, and I recognize her right away. I love Mariah Carey. I love her.
Yeah.
And she's dynamite looking, right? She's hot as shit. And she sat down, and she was with her, looked like a boyfriend, obviously. And the two of them were in this booth, and I thought it'd be a really clever idea, Russ, if I just sashayed over there to say hello to Mariah and sit down at their table.
Yeah.
And I did. I sat down, and she sort of looked up, and her boyfriend said, hi, I just wanted to say hello. Huge fan, all that shit. And in 2 seconds flat, Russ, 2 seconds flat, there were two guys behind me tapping me on the shoulder saying, what's up, Skipper? You know?
Yeah.
And
come with us.
Yeah. Come. Yeah. Maybe you should find your way back to your table. You know, so Russ, we were supposed to tape last night. And we had to wait to do it tonight, and I spent all day with believe me, this is kind of one of the neatest funerals I've ever been to.
I don't think the dead guy would have said that.
Fuck.
Neatest funerals. Poor guy's cold as ice in the box. Okay, tell us how neat it was.
Well, this guy. So he knew he was going to die. He had cancer, and he only had he only had a couple months to live, and he died quicker than that. But in the meantime, he got together, and everyone always says, "I'm gonna, you know, who are going to be my pallbearers and all this stuff, right?" Well, this guy Russ choreographed this whole thing from the start to finish, but it was really cool. It was really cool. It was, there wasn't, there was a few moments of sadness in it, but he had decided, I'm not doing this thing with a bunch of people crying and going through this thing.
Good for him.
And and it started, Russ, he had like a jazz ragtime band.
Oh.
Like eight guys come in playing Oh and the Saints, and he had another choir, Ukrainian men's choir and stuff, and then a bunch of people who spoke, but he gave them very strict instructions about you make it funny.
Yeah.
Make it funny. And
yeah.
And really a guy spoke about that. He said, listen, I'm up here, I'm a friend. He had different things in his life. He was a very accomplished musician, so he had a guy he knew from the music industry. He was a fanatic golfer, so he had a golf buddy. He had a family member get up and stuff like that, and it was all done ahead of time. It was almost a couple hours long. It flew by, and but the one guy got up and said, okay, here's how this is going to go, and he had his sheets of paper. And he said, everything you're about to hear is from George, because I had no choice in what I was going
to
say.
I think when you get to plan like that, you can make it, you know, enjoyable and celebration of life, right? That's what they call them now, not funerals.
That's exactly
it. And I think it's when people suddenly die, you don't know they're going to die, and obviously they didn't either, and everybody's sad and upset, but this guy knew he was going to die. What was his name?
George Blondheim, for people who...
George Blondheim. So George got to sit there and plan it, which is, you know, like planning a wedding, I guess. He got to plan his exit.
It was absolutely great. I'm not kidding. People are going to think I'm crazy, but no, it was really well done.
So are you now like you've emceed everything, right, from soup to nuts? So now are you emceeing funerals? How much do I have to pay you now to come to my funeral?
My old man, I'll do it for nothing for you. My old man was drop dead funny, as you know. You've heard some stories about him.
And, yeah,
you
never. I wish I had met him.
You never got to meet him, but he's your style. He's super sarcastic like you, and my mother. I was telling a story. This my mother had a friend, a longtime friend of hers, who was a single woman her whole life, and so she would come to visit. I remember as a kid, you know, this older friend of my mom's would come to visit, and she wasn't the best looking woman, Russ. Okay.
Oh, because I was gonna, you know, where I was gonna go with this.
Easy, Russ. Easy.
I wonder if your mom had.
Stop it.
Mom and dad had something with. What's her name?
Stop it, Russ.
Well, she's never been married, no kids.
Jesus, Russ.
She used to come stay with us.
What the fuck is going on?
She's not
here?
Related.
How did I lose this? Anyway, my old man used to crack jokes, you know, on the side. He'd sort of wink and go, "Well, I know why she's single, you know." She never, right? No. He goes, "There's not enough cash in the world, you know." And he would call, and my mom would go, "Stop it," you know. And anyway, she died eventually, and we all went to her funeral, and it was a Catholic funeral, so it was an open casket. And my old man walked up to the casket and he goes, "They got to close the casket." And he'd always crack these jokes at, you know, sort of, "Dad, you can't do that right now."
As I would say, at the right time.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm going to plan my own funeral now. The guy got it going on. It was good. Anything about Oscars? Did you? No, you had dinner last night, so you didn't do anything there. You watched the old Boys on the Bus video.
Yep. Yeah, yesterday it was on DirecTV down here in LA, and
now tell everyone what it is. I know what it is, but tell
it was everyone. A little documentary of the great Oilers back in the mid 80s, and it was kind of one of the, like now they do these 30 for 30 and
right.
And oh my God, those guys were so young and they're just so cool, and everybody idolized the Oilers back then.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just great to see, like, even Slats talking about, you know, "I'm compassionate, but it's all about winning."
Yeah.
And I've got compassion. I'm compassionate towards these guys. But if we're not winning, then they know the compassion's out the window. And, you know, they're going to hear, or we might have to make trades. And, you know, the pressure was always on the Oilers to win every year. And they talked about that. And success.
It's
and,
cool. It's a, yeah. If you've never seen,
yeah, it's a good story. And the one where they're around the table, they've obviously been drinking. They've got drinks under the table, I'm assuming, and they've let loose. And to hear these young superstars buzzed talking. It's funny. Mess and Koff and Kevin and Gretz and Andy, Glenn Anderson, Grant Fuhrer.
Oh yeah,
Coffee. It was just awesome.
I was just out of frame on a bunch of that video.
Behind the camera?
I was serving booze.
Behind the cameraman.
But the Oilers, you know, there's been so many things said about them. They're kind of the most recent dynasty, right? People still talk about mm-hmm. that. Chicago took a little run there. So they had a fantastic team, of course, but they really did have great parties. The group of those guys, Gretzky, of course, Mark Messier, Paul Coffey, Glenn Anderson, Grant Fuhrer, they all hung together, away from the ice. You know, and they were, and I'm sure that had a lot to do with their winning ways, man. Because they, like when we went out in the summers, when they won the cup, it was the full gamut. It was, Mess was like, okay, get Kevin, get him, get Gretz. And often, like you went to watch a baseball game, like there'd be 6-7 of the older guys there. You know?
They were a pack. And they were super cool. Everybody wanted to be one of the, you know, it was like the Beatles. You know, you were like, you wanted to be one of those guys. And they were just—they were awesome. They were studs, and they had so much fun. Like they just looked like they're having more fun than anybody at all times.
Oh, fuck! I'm just running through the stories, going, I can't tell that. No,
my brother. No, so Jeff was on the '88 Stanley Cup winning team Edmonton, and he got traded for Andy Moog from Boston, which was awesome because they ended up beating Boston in the final. And he said, Russ, I've never met a crazier bunch of people in my life. And he had a van, and he was like the designated driver driving around Edmonton after they won with the cup in his van and all these guys. And he said, we had a party last night downtown, and there were so many people that couldn't get into the bar. They took all the furniture out of the bar into the middle of the street.
That's true.
And had all the couches and chairs around and the cup in the middle of the downtown in the street. And he said, we partied till the sun came up. Yeah. He said, it was crazy.
I drove down the freeway during one of those summers. They were celebrating the Stanley Cup, and we were at a bar. And Mark owned a clothing company that time. He had a little jean company. It was kind of cool.
11s or something?
Yeah, 11.
Like that?
It was called Number 11. And there was a fashion show. We all piled into this bar and we're hammered. And Kevin and I are hitting golf balls off the roof of my company car from Molson. Okay, it was like, sedan. We're doing that. And then Kevin takes off, right? And Mess looks up when we're sitting around the bar. He's like, where's Kevin? I said, he went home. He goes, I don't think so. Pull the car around, okay? Okay? Yeah, I don't think so. That ain't happening, okay? Yeah. And if we're going, we're going. And so Mess is in the front. He's in the front seat of my car. There's a chick in between the two of us. There's people in the back. And we're driving down the freeway. And in those days, Rusty had a cassette deck, right, in your car.
Yeah.
Not even before DVDs. And we all grabbed a cassette deck, and we pulled a little bit of the tape out of it, you know, and you grabbed it. And then we threw it out the window, so it was like wedding streamers, okay, down
streamers.
The freeway. And Mess was driving the car from the passenger side, like he was working the wheel.
Yeah.
And into Kevin's neighborhood on the horn, 3:30 in the morning, and drove right up on his lawn. And Mess just, don't take your hand off that horn, Jimmy. You know, lights are fucking going on everywhere. That was one of many great parties they had. But anyway, and if your brother, Jeff, okay, is one of the craziest guys I know, is saying these guys are crazy. You can imagine, you know. But it was all fun, man. It was all fun.
But they played hard and they partied hard. But they came to play every freaking night. I mean, they were unbelievable.
Were you guys ever jealous of them, Russ, or was it something in a positive way? Was it something you guys ever sit down? Would the Oilers' name come up a lot in other dressing rooms and say?
Just game, you know, when you played against them and you'd just be in awe, like you'd be in awe. They didn't have one or two guys. They had like eight or nine. And
Jesus,
every player had different, you know, every player has different, style of player that they want to be like, or they, they respect, or, you know, or they appreciate it. And so, you know, the offensive guys would follow their offensive guys. But I was looking at that, the boys on the bus, they had Kent Nielsen. For people who don't know, Kent Nielsen is one of the greatest players to ever play the game, or one of the most talented players to ever play the game. And, you know, his knock was he didn't try hard enough, but this guy was phenomenal. And he was he played with Glenn Anderson and Mark on their line, and you know, the Gretz and Curry. And
yep.
We'd play these games against him, and you'd just be like, you'd want to play your best game because you wanted to, you know, show Wayne or Mess or whoever, Koff, like, you know, you wanted to show him your stuff. So teams would get so fired up, players would get so fired up to play against them,
right.
And it was amazing. And just watching them, I joked about this on the show before, where they'd get on the power play and be like, no, your turn. No, your turn. No, Mess here. Oh, Koff. No, Curry. Oh, Andy. No, Gretz. No, here, throw it back to Fierzy so he can get another assist. He had 13 that year, I think.
Settle a debate then, Russ, on this. Because it's been going on for years and years about the Edmonton Oilers, which I could talk about forever, my meal ticket. Sather was the GM and coach. Mm-hmm. Of those teams, and often people would say, why is this guy getting so much credit? Anybody could have coached that team.
Wendell Clark played for Slats in an All-Star game, and he said the guy was so, it was so great being around him at the time. I think we might have had John Brophy, so he goes there and he goes, oh my, just the stuff he said was so simple, and it was so right and so smart. And I've never heard anyone say that Glenn Sather wasn't a good coach. I've never, ever heard that. I mean, ever.
Well, not saying he's a good coach. They're just saying anyone could have coached this team.
Yeah, but that's what you're saying, basically, is he's not a good coach if anybody could do that.
Don't yell at me. You're yelling. Don't yell at me.
No, I'm not yelling. I'm just, you told me to scream into the mic. You couldn't hear me.
Okay, well,
But I've never heard anyone say that Glenn wasn't a good coach. In fact, I've heard nothing but good things about him as a coach.
And he's a great guy. He's a hell of a guy.
Dave Semenko, he used to get fined all the time.
Yes, he did.
And at the end of the year, Slats would call him in. You know, you always have an exit meeting, and so you go in. You know, they go over what kind of year you had and what they expect from you. And Slats, I guess, would reach into his desk, pull out an envelope of cash, and it was all the fine money for being late for curfew and practice. And
oh.
And he'd give it back to Sammy every year.
Oh, nice. Isn't that nice?
And then they brought in a rule that you can't do that. It's $1 million fine if you give back a fine. Because, you know, you guys would get fined, and then the team would just pay the guy back, pay the fine, and then give the player.
Right.
Especially tough guys, because they didn't make as much money as the other guys, and they were protecting their players. And once the league found that out, they were like, no, that's not going to happen anymore. Anyone caught giving back a fine to a player's, you know, $1 million fine to the owner. So that ended in a hurry.
As if they can't find a way to give it back. Yeah. That's a dumb rule. Russ, there's a story that came out today as we move along here. Uh-oh. And I don't understand it, but maybe you can help me out. The Arizona Coyotes are in some hot water off the ice. They've struggled both on and off the ice. A bad trade, eh? Taylor Hall just did not. They were doing okay. And then...
okay, they were first in the freaking West.
Right. And now, and they got Taylor Hall, and they're fighting now, fighting for their life.
The curse. They traded for the curse.
The curse, man. Yeah. They've struggled both on and off the ice. Well, the on-ice issues hurt the team. I'm just reading here. The off-ice issues are more important. The Coyotes are being investigated for fitness testing draft-eligible players in about 20 incidents, according to Darren Dreger of TSN. All of the allegations really hurt the team. So what's the deal there, Russ? Is that against the rules?
I don't know the rules today, but that's obviously, if they're bringing it up, it sounds like they broke a rule. when I went through the draft a million years ago, the teams were allowed to call you and talk to you because they were allowed to interview you. They wanted to find out what kind of person you were, find out about your family, and that I'm assuming is still allowed because you want to know more about the player on a personal level than what you see on the ice. You want to make sure they have good character and whether they're going to be a fit. But it sounds like this isn't okay. Why are they talking about it? Why are they bringing it up? It sounds like it's not okay. And the only thing I can think of is that it's just giving the advantage of them finding out what kind of fitness level this person has and then possibly learning more about them than other teams, I guess. Because they have that combine where they go and get fitness test.
Yeah. And so they go have that combine where they have white claws.
Only had two claws, by the way. So they have the combine, so maybe that's where every team's on the playing level equally, but where you find out about the player. So this is news to me, and you would think that if they were breaking the rule that these kids have agents, they wouldn't allow their client to get involved in that.
Well, I think it's just stupid.
It seems silly.
If you're playing for the Ottawa 67s and you got some promise, so if I pick up the phone and call their trainer and go, what sort of fitness does this kid have? We're thinking of drafting him. Is that's against the fucking rules? Or unless if they tested them themselves or something. But anyway, what's next? You know, there's been sign stealing in baseball.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. How about today? I read that the pitcher from the Dodgers, I didn't get into it, but I saw it on Instagram, suing the Astros now for $31 million. And I wonder if that cost him, you know, his career, or maybe it hurt his going forward. But it just popped up on my phone. And now the players are starting to sue the Astros. Oh, my God. This thing is not going away.
Yes, folks, sign stealing has been going on for years when there's a base runner on second, right, that they steal these signs.
Yeah.
But they've been using technology to do it. And so they watch replays, and then there's a guy in the clubhouse who's watching on an iPad, and he runs out to the bench and has figured out what these signs are and stuff. Because they watch the telecast, right? They got that center field camera, right? Which is on the on the catcher all the time, giving the signs. Anyway, that thing busts wide open, if you haven't heard. And the Astros are in all sorts of trouble. They get fined, I don't know, $50 million or something, maybe more. Bunch of dough, manager gets fired. So what happens out of this weeks later? So all the shit's come down, okay? What's the follow-up going to be about whether these guys got to give back their championship, Houston? Pete Rose pipes up, okay?
Oh, boy, right? I love Pete.
Pete comes in, who's been trying to get in the Hall of Fame for years.
Yeah.
And he's been shunned because he gambled on baseball, and yet he's going, well, wait a minute here. Then you know, none of these guys better get in the Hall of Fame, you know? And he thinks he should be allowed now to get into the Hall of Fame. And what do you think?
That's a tough one. Pete Rose, by the way, is one of the funniest guys. I was at an event. And Steve, Steve Garvey. So Steve Garvey, if you don't know, baseball players, and real like clean cut Dodger, you know, looks like a model almost, right? Pete Rose, a little gruff. And so they get... Steve Garvey is the MC of this event, and it was at Sherwood Country Club, and it was for my friend's company called Card Service International, right. And they invited Pete Rose to play with some of their clients, and then Steve was talking. He loves the mic. Well, Pete Rose got up, and he absolutely buried Steve Garvey.
No.
and Steve Garvey was making all these faces, and it was so funny. Like, the more he upset Steve, the funnier it got. And then Pete could see that he was really pissed off, so he just kept going. He kept throwing more fuel in the fire. Oh, nice. It was priceless. Yeah. But Pete Rose, well-spoken, funny guy. Cheater. It's just, unfortunately, he freaking bet on, you know, too bad he just didn't bet on hockey or football. He would have been fine.
Anyway, we'll have to see what happens with Pete Rose. Before we go, Rusty, a guy named Matthew Cherry, a former NFL player, I think in the early 2000s to mid-2000s, or, I don't know, 05, 04, somewhere in there, he won an Oscar last night.
What?
Yeah.
No way.
He won it for Best Animated Short on a show called that he put together called Hair Love, about a, I think, a single father whose daughter wanted to have her hair looked after. And so he had to do this. I haven't seen it, but it must be very good because he won an Oscar. And I thought that's amazing that the guy did this. Kobe Bryant also won one.
Mm-hmm. Last year. I think it was last year, 2 years ago.
I thought that's kind of, I love those stories where I hear about guys whose whole life is around football or basketball in this case, and that they have this, not just talent here. The guy won a fucking Oscar, you know?
Yeah.
I said, I got to ask Rusty if he knew of any guys that he played with, and then we'll get out of here, that had exceptional talent at other stuff, you know? I think of Chris Chelios that, this is not a stretch, folks, that he could have competed. His father's Greek. Chelios is Greek. His parents are Greek. That he could have competed for the Greek bobsled team.
Oh, I remember that he was thinking about during the lockout, I think.
Yeah.
And he was going to go try out or put a team together.
Well, they would have put him on it. And then he's such a cool guy, Chris Chelios. He's like nobody you'll ever meet. And dry sense of humor, funny guy. Women love him. Like, he looks about 30 years old. And he said in the end, no, I'm not going to do it because it's taken a spot from some guy who's tried to work for this his whole life.
Yeah.
So, because he would out-fitness anybody, right?
Yeah.
He was really good. Anyway, that was that. And I thought maybe Rusty knows some guys that...
Well, there's a guy who played in Boston with my brother, Craig Ninehouse.
I remember Craig.
And he didn't play...
Yeah,
Craig. And... Craig is a teammate of Paul Messier over in Europe. So he went from the Bruins, big, good-looking guy.
Yep.
Ninehouse. So he didn't fight and was built like a Greek god. And so Boston gassed him, and he went over to Europe and played. And then he came back and he got into music, and now he has a band and he plays a bunch of shows. He's done our charity events. He's really, really talented.
Yes.
Like we were at the awards banquet for the NHL. Jeff and I handed out an award in Vancouver.
Right.
For the NHL awards and for charitable work and we went to the Roxy, which is a famous bar in Vancouver that all the hockey players go
still
to.
Still around? The Roxy?
Is it? Yeah, oh, yeah. It's unbelievable. And so we're there, and they always have a house band that plays most nights. And so my brother Jeff goes up to the guy who he knows and says, hey, can my buddy get up? And they always let guys get up and play that can play or sing. Mm-hmm. He gets up, and the whole frickin' bar gets on the dance floor, and the place turns into the biggest rock concert ever. And the guy, after two songs, goes, okay, that's enough. Get off the stage. He was embarrassed and jealous. But Craig Ninehouse, he can sing, man. Oh, is he good.
He can sing. I'm glad you brought that up. That's a great example. And because he's a good hockey player, pro. Not only can he sing, because at your event, we all piled into a bar after being at the golf course there years ago, and he loves getting up there, right? To be a good,
oh, yeah.
I mean, he loves entertaining. Yeah. He loves showing off in a good way.
Yeah.
And so he's a really good singer, songwriter, and guitar player. And because he wrote a song, and Mess hates listening to because he cries like a baby when he hears it.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden, he jumps on stage and rips the drumsticks out of the drummer's hand and sits down and does a freaking solo, drum solo that is out of this world.
Yeah, he's that good. He really
is. What other talents do you have, Russ? There's the end of the show. There we go. That brings it to a screeching halt.
I throw a great late lunch, early dinner party.
Yeah, you do. You don't want to snap a beer open better than that. Let's hear it again, Stevie, the snapping the beer. There it is right there. Rusty, another one in the books. This is good. The new and improved suspendables. This has been another great show. You're in town now for the rest of the week. What's happening?
Yeah, you can empty your ashtray and
good.
Get ready to fill it up again.
Who are you pulling for now in the NHL? Who are you liking? Who are you liking is going to sneak in there? My Oilers are back on track.
Oh, I just saw, how about Columbus in the last 10, 12 games? It's a seesaw going. I mean, the top teams are the top teams, but who knows? Look at Arizona. They were first, now they're worst, and I don't know, man.
More parity now, Russ, than there ever was in the league?
Oh, yeah. I've said this a million times. You just got to get in. You got to be one. It doesn't matter. I mean, home ice is great, but you just got to be in the top 16 and get in the playoffs, and you can win because the teams are that good. I mean, they just are.
That's good.
I'm loving watching Ovechkin just crushing goals and going after Gretz's record. Well, I think he's 200 away or something crazy.
Yeah, and he talks about it. He's like, absolutely, I want to break his record. There's no doubt about it. Yeah.
Look at Philly. Philly's 6-1-1 in their last 8 games.
And the Olympics, Russ. What players might be allowed to go? Are you going if you got the tap on the shoulder, Russ?
I played in the 84 Olympics, played in the World Championships, represented Canada, and I love it. I think that it's great for the game. I understand why the owners and the league is, you know, protecting their assets, which are the best players in the world. There is risk I totally understand both sides, but I just think it's great for hockey if the best players in the world get to go and represent their country. I love Ovechkin. I'm going whether I'm allowed to or not. I love it. I just love this guy.
Well, I'll tell you what. I ended up in your hometown for the 2010 Olympics. I drove out, said, I got to go. I was doing the radio show, and I pleaded with the station, let me go and do the show from there. Get me a hotel and all that. And the guy said, no, if you want to go, go do it. But we're not fucking paying for anything for you. And I drove out. I was going to stay a few days, and I stayed the whole 2 weeks.
Oof.
And I remember going to the gold medal Olympic game, and there's nothing like it. Like, I've been to Stanley Cups. I've been to the World Series. I've been to the Masters. I haven't been to any World Cup of Soccer or anything, but man, oh, man. And I've been to tons of Stanley Cups, of course, living in Edmonton, with the noise and the partying and all that stuff. But nothing ever compared to that gold medal game in Vancouver. So
yeah. And the Olympics are so cool because it was friendly, a friendly atmosphere. You walk down the streets of Vancouver and country, people were wearing their jersey from whatever country they were from, and people were high-fiving them. And it was just I was there representing Team Canada and that at the Molson.
Canada House.
Man. Canada House. And it was a blast. And the whole experience was great. It was really, really cool. And I went back up I took some friends, and they still talk about it to this day, how great.
And do you remember they had a lot of trouble at, I guess Grouse Mountain held some events, but they had a lot of trouble with the weather. But do you remember, I don't know if you were walking around, I forget what event it was, but there was a Canadian kid. It might have been freestyle or moguls or something like that, and he was Canada's sort of biggest lock for a medal. And I remember walking downtown, and everyone was lined up looking in store windows. They all put TVs in their store windows, you know, and to show the Olympics all the time. It was incredible. You could hear the roar. You could hear the roar through downtown. So,
It was great.
Anyway, there we go. Russ,
is that is that your popcorn maker?
No, that's my cat. My cat's going. Oh. Tell Russ to piss off. That's what he's saying.
Yeah. What are you and the cat sharing it for dinner tonight?
I don't know.
What flavor catnip are you
having? I'm eating tuna, Russ. You know, the cats get their cat food.
Tuna by the sea.
What should we learn from today's show, Russ, before we go? A little final thought. How about this one? I say a friend of mine died, and I went to a really cool funeral, and you go, I bet he didn't think it was cool.
Yeah. Freaking stone cold in the box.
Let's get out of here, everyone. Have a good week.
Yeah, or that your mom might have been a swinger.
What the? Oh, my God. Oh, geez. I got to throw up.
No kids. This lady had no kids.
Listen, pal,
Never been married, and she used to come stay with us.
Really, is this the road you want to go down? About cracking the lid off me being able to make jokes about your family? You're in trouble. Tune in next show. We'll talk to you later, Rusty. See ya.
See ya, pal.